All right, great to have you with us this morning. Game two of this three-game series, and it's Joe Musgrove and Carlos Rodon. It's going to be tough to top last night. An excellent baseball game. Didn't go the Giants' way. They lost 8-7 and 10, but that's baseball. Bruce Jenkins, good morning. How are you?
Good, Marty. How are you doing?
Very well. I thought last night was one of those amazing games that brings you back to baseball. And, you know, we didn't have the three true outcomes, and that's it. And the ball was flying all over the place, base running and things like that. I loved it.
Oh, it was really entertaining. I mean, a lot of really good things happened, especially the way they created a rally, you know, with two outs and nobody on. They needed two runs, and they got it very, very patiently with walks and, you know, not chasing pitches. And then, you know, they got the big hit from Flores. But that was really nice because it seemed like the game was over, and then the Giants very quickly said, you know, it's not over. Estrada earlier in the game, he just continues to impress, doesn't he? I mean, he gets that two-strike double down the right field line in the eighth inning. They didn't get a run out of it, but it was the kind of hit that could set something up. And it was really fun. You know, the Padres are very, very good. They really don't have, you look at that lineup, there's really not a weakness in it. It's not that everybody's a great hitter or a great defensive player, but there's just good ball players up and down and some of the best guys in the league. So to play them even up is encouraging.
Well, Andy Baggerly was just on talking about Estrada, Bruce, and it's something you and I have talked about. You know, if you look at him on the field, you'd say, well, he doesn't have much range. He's a little stiff. He hits more ground balls than fly balls and all that. But, you know, it's like the old Eddie Stanky thing, you know. He can't hit, he can't field, he can't throw, he'll just beat you. And, this guy has 20 RBIs, he's got a ton of runs scored, and he comes through. I think he's been maybe one or two of the best surprise of the year so far.
Yeah, I'd say definitely. And he does have some power. Every now and then he'll jack one out. So, you know, everything they've asked him to do, he has done. I think he's made more good plays in the field than ones that he didn't make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's in a situation where he's really constantly trying to prove himself because, you know, the second base spot has really not been decided in terms of one guy taking it over, and that probably won't be the case. But, you know, you have to come through on the days that you get a chance, and he's just always looks ready. He's a good ball player.
Yep, he's done well. The analytics are not favorable towards him, but he can play.
Oh, whatever. No, sorry.
That's it. Thank God. You know, he can play.
Yeah.
All right. Manny Machado. You know, I've been on this bandwagon since the first week of the season. I think this guy is ready for an MVP season. And, Bruce, he did things last night, and I know you appreciate it. He went first to third on a ground ball to short and then scored on a wild pitch, and it turned out to be a run that they needed. And then he hit the bomb off Duvall to the left center field. It was up a long time and just crushed the wall out there, and that was the run that got him going in the 10th inning. How about Machado?
Yeah. Duvall kind of hung a breaking pitch there, which was that's never a good idea. That was unfortunate. But, yeah, I mean, he's a guy that – and I know they asked Gabe if they thought about walking him, and – You can see that, but then he, you know, with the way things are going, you might be putting the winning run on first base. You know, if you walk him, he becomes the winning run. You never know. I mean, Pete Alonso let off one of the extra innings with a two run homer.
Yes, that's true. Very good.
I didn't have a big problem with them pitching to him. I'd love to see the confrontation. I'm sure Duvall wanted a piece of him, and you know, better pitch, and maybe he grounds out the second, but. Machado's unbelievable. He's always ready to. He's one of those guys. The real stars are always ready to beat you in little ways. You know, going back to Willie Mays, but you know, guys like Soto today, and you know, Cesar Cedeno, just guys that light up the field. He's got power, hits for average. He's an unbelievable fielder, great arm, and like you say, well, you know, when he goes to first to third, there, that's not genius, but it's awareness, and he's just always ready to beat you.
Yeah, nobody at third base, and just took off, and next thing you knew, he was there. This is a good rivalry, these two teams. They match up well, and as Andy said, you know, the first series of the year should have been down there, and of course it got wiped out, and now they're going to have to play that series in October down there. And 10 of the next 13, after these two, 10 of the next 13 against the Padres are down there.
Yeah, that's right. They end the season in San Diego, October 3, 4, 5. Good
yeah, that's
grief.
The one that got wiped out.
That could be a killer for the Giants if they're still in it. I mean, then again, you know, it's going to be great no matter what. If both teams are in it, that'll be sensational. But, yeah, with the schedule, I always go back to however quirky it gets, at least we got 162, you know. But, I mean, however it shakes down. But, I mean, but yeah, you know, Machado and Hosmer, Cronenworth, you know, Profar can hurt you in a lot of ways. I've always liked Myers, little power, and yeah, I think Robinson Cano is going to help them. Mm. He's still a good hitter. He's one of those guys that I think who will always hit. And you know, Kim and Gresham, just all the way up and down, they're a good club. You know, probably you know better talent. I think the scouts, are strictly speaking, than the Giants. But you know, the Giants play them tough. They play everybody tough.
They do. They do. And no Tatis. I remember that.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Cano. I watched him last night. I thought the bat speed is still there. His last bat, well, he fouled off about five or six before taking a third strike. I thought the bat speed is still there for him. It's not falling in, but I saw something. I said, all right, he may be able to help him.
Well, he, you know, in his prime, which he might still be in for all we know when he's at the plate, he was one of the most respected hitters in the game, just bar none. Just a solid left-handed hitter. And yeah, I like the pickup there. I'm thinking, geez, they get a lot better picking him up. So we'll see how it goes. But he's going to help them.
Mm. Good game last night. It was a lot of fun. A lot of baseball things last night. And the last thing I'll say about last night, Bruce, at the end of the game, they have these guys that come in and throw 98, 99, 100, and all they do is throw sliders. And they get ahead in the count 0-2, and then they start playing around, and they can't find the plate. And before you know it, Ruff walks, and Peterson, 2 for 39, he walks, and they try to jam Flores, and it's a flare over the infield, and it's 6-6. But these guys just don't say, here's the fastball, hit it. Duvall's the same way.
Yeah, well, and you have to be I don't know. I mean, it's there's so many angles there. I mean, some of these guys come in, and you're just not going to touch them. But, you know, with a little bit of patience that the Giants showed you know, and it's like the slider is the go-to pitch now. That's what used to be. Well, this is a fastball count. Now they're all slider counts.
Yep. Yeah, that's the difference. So we'll leave that alone. That was Garcia last night, and much to the Giants' advantage, and they took advantage of it, and they fought back. And this is a team that doesn't have an all-star offensively. I don't think there will be one unless Crawford gets a sentimental pick. They've got a couple of pitchers that could be on the All-Star team, but this is a team that is a real baseball team, and that's what I like about it. So Roger Angel passed away, and I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Some very, very moving statements and columns that have been written about him. 101 years old, but a very, very special baseball writer.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping he'd be the first guy who doesn't actually pass away. He'd be 114.
Maybe he didn't.
And you know, he was writing great to the end. I mean, this is one of America's great writers, just period, you know, well beyond the sporting element. He just happened to have a passion for baseball. But I got to know him a little bit. He had my wife and I to dinner one night in spring training in Florida, which is very special. But watching him work and then reading him, you know, after the fact when the piece comes out, I mean, you learn you're never going to – and please don't ever try to – write like him. That's not going to happen. I mean, not anybody I've known in our business. He was one of a kind in terms of his writing talent. You know, close connection to E.B. White and just a true master of the language. But you could learn an awful lot reading him about things that are important in writing, like having rhythm, having economy. Mm-hmm. You know, avoiding clutter and wasted words, and to watch him talk to everybody. But rarely would he quote anyone. You know, so many writers go, well, I'm going to go downstairs and the quotes will build the story. He was the opposite. He'd throw in a quote if it was absolutely necessary, but he was an observer. Mm-hmm. And he'd sit down and talk to his subject and just learn about him. And meanwhile, watching, you know, everything else that's going on. And he'd come up with things that he did observe well before the game, during the game. And it was just, it was true genius. And it was just such a pleasure. It was just fine literature in the New Yorker. What a treat.
Leaves a great legacy, Roger Angel, yeah. Very, very special. A couple of things this week that kind of caught my eye, that were kind of fun. Did you see the triple by Daniel Vogelbach? did you see of the Pirates?
Yeah.
You got to, so everyone understands, he's about 5'9", about 295 pounds. And, you know, he looks like Smokey Burgess's grandfather, you know, running around the bases. And he hits one to left field. Ian Happ tries to get it in the ivy. It kicks away. And Vogelbach gets a triple. And just describe that one for me.
Well, I'm trying to recall exactly. I did see it. I was more focused on just the sight of him, you know, steaming around the bases. But
it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a great baseball thing, is what it is. I mean, you look at that guy; he looks like the backup guard on a high school team. You know, this pudgy offensive guard. Hey, they're going to give him a play. Ah, this is great, you know. And but he can hit.
Yes.
Big guys can hit. You know, overweight guys can hit. And he's proven that he can hit, and he can run a little bit. He had hit the perfect, you know, the perfect shot for him, where it went up the alley and kicked around a little bit, and all of a sudden he's got a chance to do that. And it's just a beautiful thing to know that it's not impossible for a guy built like that to hit a triple in the big leagues.
No, it makes baseball beautiful. So not only he's first of all, the 97% of the major leaguers are faster than him. That's number one, and we got Miguel Cabrera and Pujols in that crowd too.
Yeah.
But then, all right, so then he's on third. Now there's a fly ball to right field, and Suzuki's got a good arm. This is Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
And he decides to tag up, and he comes down the line, and he's out by like 7 feet, and he falls into Contreras, and Contreras pushes him off him, and the next thing you know, the benches have cleared. And then I said, this is Wrigley Field. This is a Wrigley Field moment.
Absolutely, and leave it to Vogelbach to trigger it. You know,
great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just another one of those things that you couldn't have dreamed up, and it unfolds in front of you. It's like, for heaven's sake.
How do you like Trevor's story? And of course, everyone was doubting him in the Red Sox. It's three homers, and then yesterday. Hits a slam, so he's got 4 homers, 11 RBIs in 2 games. And not only did he hit a grand slam, but a 3-run homer for Jackie Bradley Jr., who can't hit at all. So
yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, Trevor Story has had the whole Fenway, you know, fans experience in like a week, you know, the good and the bad. He started off terribly. He was playing second base. You know, he's really a shortstop by trade. They're wondering, why did they get him, but why did he go there? And why didn't he go someplace? I know he wanted to sign with Texas, and that didn't work out. But, you know, they got Bogarts at short, and Story's looking a little bit awkward at second. He makes a bad throw here. He's hitting, you know, around the Mendoza line. It's like, oh, man, this is really brutal. But, you know, we know this guy from the way he faced the Giants. He's a real good guy, good power hitter, good hitter, period, good player. And all of a sudden, you can't get him out, and the fans who have been all over him are just—he's a god now. I mean, he's the toast of Fenway, and I don't think he's going to find a medium between those two things and be a really good player. But it's still a little bit awkward for Bogarts, you know, knowing that you know Story is might even be a level above him among big league shortstops, which is saying something.
Yeah, it's good baseball story this week. I like it, the fact that he broke loose. And how about Nate Eovaldi? 5 homers given up in 1 inning. Can you believe that?
He got them all out of the way in a hurry.
Really?
And he's out of trouble now.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, you know, you watch baseball every day, and that's why I love to just chat with you about it. You know, you see something every day that you can talk about. How about Aaron Judge? What he's doing with the Yankees right now, and he complained about the Orioles Park, that they moved the fences back. It's tougher for him to hit a home run there. He forgets he plays in Yankee Stadium, where right field is like a little league field. So, but
it really is.
He's going to be a free agent. He's going to get $300 million, and I would love to see the Giants get in the middle of this for this kid from the Valley, and I think he would be just great in this ballpark.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a little bit odd for him to complain about any ballpark, the way he hits them out. He's one of the great power hitters in the game. I love what they did at Camden Yards. Anytime you can make a ballpark a little bit strange, you know they call it a Bermuda Triangle of left field out there. Yeah. Give me a good triangle or even a rhombus, you know, any time in a ballpark. But Judge of the Giants, I mean that's just a dream, really. That would be unbelievable. He's got a big arm. great guy. He's local, power hitter. You know, I mean, we talk locally about, geez, you know, is the ball really dead? And most, a lot of that is that the Giants and the A's, they don't really have a guy like that. Mm-hmm. The big guys are mashing the ball. The big guys are sending them way out of the park. And that's happening everywhere, especially Judge. I mean, he had two other homers that night that he got robbed of a third. Mm-hmm. And to have – that's a real power hitter that the Giants haven't had in quite a while. So that would be unbelievable. I'm sure they'll be in the mix. He's a guy that maybe you don't cringe, you know, away from a long-term deal. I don't know about 10 years. Those are pretty ridiculous. But I'm sure they'll be in the mix, and whether he lands here, I don't know. But I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
No, and he probably would like to come here, yeah. You know, from the Valley and Fresno State and all that kind of stuff. And frankly, it's only money. And their payroll next year will be $100 million. That's all they're committed to.
Yeah,
and you know the salary cap, whatever you want to call the tax threshold, is like $233 million. So there's plenty of money for Aaron Judge. I hope they get in the middle of it with him. I really do. But I think you're right, Bruce. I think the number of years would be the problem. It wouldn't be the annual average value of the contract. It would be the number of years.
Yeah, yeah, and you know they've backed off, you know, time after time. Going long term, you know, they didn't bring Gausman back. You know, they got Rodon for just a year, maybe two, and they've been thrifty. You know, at a time when people expected them to go crazy. Mm-hmm. I think Farhan's been proven right because they're still very good. They're in the mix. They're going to be as long as their rotation stays healthy in the bullpen. So they're doing things right, but they've got that ace in the hole where they can make a big splash like that.
Yep.
And I think Judge would be perfect.
Yeah, the money's there, and we'll talk about Soto tomorrow. But I'd rather have Judge because it's only money. You wouldn't have to give up half your farm system to get him. We had the debut this week in the Pacific Coast League. I don't know if you saw Josh Sushan. He did a nice piece on MLB. He does the broadcast for the Albuquerque Isotopes, which is a great name. You just figure they're going to be wearing those white suits, you know, with gloves on.
Yeah, here come the Isotopes. Look
really,
out.
Right, really. You don't want to get near them.
Yeah.
But it was the debut of the Robo-ump this week, and he had some interesting thoughts about it. What was your take on it? You know, you and I have seen this in action before in Marin County. We've watched it, so what do you think?
Well, I know, Josh, he's great. I haven't seen that piece. I'll look for it. But the whole thing to me is you got to bring it into spring training. Major League spring training, every park, every game, and let's just see where we're at with this thing. You know, I think a lot of us hated the idea at first. It's like, are you kidding? And then you start warming to the idea, you know, the notion of umpires all having their own strike zones, and you're scouting the umps. Oh, you know, low ball, no high ball here. Wait a minute, mid-game he might get you a little more high strikes. Screw that. I mean, I'm so tired of that. I want to see it. It might not work. You know, they're saying the vertical angle of the accuracy is still very much in question, where a ball in the dirt is going to show up as a strike because it might have been, you know, when it passed through wherever. The lateral part of it, the in and out, has been pretty accurate, they say. So I think there's a lot of potential hitches in it. But I do think it's time for the big leagues to throw it out in spring training so we can really get a look at it.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it tomorrow, about what it does to catchers and how it changes catching and all that kind of stuff. But my thought was you probably need a couple of challenges, because if you do get a – this is the major leagues – if you do get a pitch that's in the dirt and they call it a strike, the umpire just can't shake his hands and say, geez, sorry. You know, there's got to be a way to remedy that, and I think that's something we could talk about that tomorrow, the impact on the game. Last thing on baseball before we talk a little bit about a historical moment for today. The pitching matchup today, Bruce, this is a good one. This is Wainwright and Rodon, and it ended up being a disaster, but both these guys are pretty good, Rodon and Musgrove.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, we'll be tuned into Rodon. It's a perfect time for him to, you know, get the team back on track. And he got lit up pretty good in St. Louis, but I really don't think that was any kind of a troubling sign. You know, the big blast was Goldschmidt. He went down and sort of golfed one into the upper deck. He did a Goldschmidt thing. but I fully expect Rodon to come out firing and you know, maybe have a 2-1 lead in the sixth, something like that. because he's just that good. You know, he's proven to be one of the best in the league. And, you know, Musgrove's done a lot of great stuff for the Padres, so that'll be good. It's a great weekend for pitching matchup. Cueto's going tomorrow against the Yanks. He was unbelievable in his first start.
That's right. We got to talk about him tomorrow. Very good.
And we got who's the kid? Manoah is going against Hunter Green. That's the all stuff matchup. Cincinnati and Toronto. If you can get a chance to watch that game, good Lord.
And the Cardinals unveil Matt Liberatore today.
Yeah.
Their left-hander, Nolan Gorman, who had 15 home runs in 39 games at Memphis, he's brought up, too, to play second base for the Cardinals. So we got that going on as well. All right. Today is the, we note, the day that Ken Griffey Jr. hit his 200th Major League home run. And just think about the age he was when he did it and how spectacular that career was.
Yeah. The only younger players to hit 200 it's like Mel Ott, Eddie Matthews, Jimmy Fox, you know, Mantle Aaron, and Frank Robinson.
Wow.
That's about as good as it gets. There's no ringers in there, you know. There's no Mark Wittens in there. But he, I just, you know, when he came up, he was such, people were saying when he was in high school, he was the best prospect they've ever seen, and he was absolutely delivered. Great. He was like Barry Bonds, you know, with a smile. Barry Bonds, you know, who was a shining personality. Not quite the hitter that Bonds was, maybe, but, you know, better in the outfield. Just one of the great all-around player, great disposition that won him countless fans. And, you know, the first game he ever played was in Oakland. He came up against Dave Stewart at the Coliseum in 89 and doubled. This is how he breaks into the game. But, you know, amazing power hitter. You know, injuries kind of got him at the end, or his power numbers would be, you know, truly off the charts. But the career that he had is memorable. He made a couple of catches where he basically climbed the wall, you know, Spider-Man, planting spikes in the wall and soaring to the heights to make unbelievable catches. You know, in 95 when the Mariners finally broke through, he was the guy sliding across home plate at the Kingdome. The place is going crazy. Mm-hmm. And he had a couple big hits to make that happen earlier. And, you know, he gets to play with his dad. They played like 51 games together. Mm-hmm. One day they both homered. How about that? You and your dad both homered in a big league game. So nothing but great memories about Ken Griffey, that's for sure.
Yeah, we lose sight of maybe the greatness of the career, the way it ended, and Cincinnati, White Sox, with all that. But you're right, just some tremendous, tremendous moments for him. Well, great to chat with you. We got a good one today, and look forward to talking to you tomorrow and see how this one turns out.
Should be good. Thanks, Marty. Talk then.
All right. Terrific. That's Bruce Jenkins. Great to talk ball with Bruce on this Saturday morning. All right, more coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.